The Federal Street Espresso Bar and Gallery was built in 1901 as the Sussex Trust Bank, but over the years it has served as a school and various shops. Since it is brick, it was one of the few commercial buildings to survive the fire of 1909. As we leave the Espresso Bar, we'll turn right and walk a short distance to number 204 Federal Street, the Draper Atkins House. From here, we can get a sense of the many examples of architecture found in the town. The Draper Atkins House is one of the three structures in town independently listed on the National Register. Built around 1840 and incorporating an 18th century core, the home is a late example of the classically inspired Federal style. On the opposite side of Federal Street, you will see two other examples of mid-19th century architectural styles. Number 203 was constructed by prosperous shipbuilder William C. Prettyman in the Italianate style, modeled after Italian villas. Right next door, number 205, the former home of Dr. Robert Hopkins, was built in the French-inspired Second Empire style. Note the mansard roof and the multicolored slate shingles. Both of these styles were highly fashionable in their day. Keep walking south until you notice the yellow house at number 305. Like number 308 across the street, it is an example of the predominant architectural style of Milton, the Victorian Gothic. Each has cross gables along the front, lancet-shaped windows, and elaborate trim, sometimes called gingerbread. This style was popular during the heyday of the shipbuilding era. The St. John the Baptist Episcopal Church, nearby, can trace its roots to an Anglican church built in 1728 in the forest, 2 miles south of Milton. The current structure dates to 1877, with the clinker brick veneer added in 1936. Now it's time to turn back toward the center of town. Stop when you reach number 111, a Queen Anne structure called the Holly House. The Holly House was built in about 1901. Note the shape, the turret, and the porch and windows. The building was the home of Charles Jones, a Milton entrepreneur called the Holly Man. The business sold to florists, churches, and department stores across the nation. Over 300 independent contractors, mainly country folk and farm families, created large and small holly wreaths, holly sprays, boxwood wreaths, and roping. The holly business originally operated out of buildings located behind the house, along Strawberry Alley. Gladys Wilkins remembers women making holly wreaths when she was a child.
The holly, we have Mr. Jones, the holly wreath man, that one of the wreaths went to New York City, and then I think one time one went to Wanamaker's or Gimbel's in Philadelphia. The women did the holly business in the wintertime. They made holly wreaths at nighttime and sold them for extra money for Christmas.
From here, we'll continue north through town until we reach the Union Street commercial block, stopping briefly at the intersection of Front Street. At Front Street, turn right and walk a few steps until you reach the entrance of the fire department, facing the Broadkill River. About a mile to your right, where Cave Neck Road intersects Front Street, is the site of the old hosiery mill. The mill was established in the 1930s to produce silk stockings. With the onset of World War II, though, the mill owner switched to nylon. Nothing now remains except a cement pad. Closer to where you're standing, across the street and a bit to the right, is the site of one of Milton's chicken plants. This area was also home to the earlier shipbuilding industry. The Milton Volunteer Fire Department is an all-volunteer force founded in 1901. Sirens like the one you just heard have seen a lot of service over the past 70 or so years. Jack Hudson, a former Milton mayor and longtime fire department volunteer, tells us more about the siren.
And the siren that's at the firehouse is the original one.
From?
The beginning. That's the first fire siren that was in town. And it was from the 30s. And it's been rebuilt 3 or 4 times. It just wears out and it has a distinctive sound and we hate to buy a new one. Because the new one won't sound like that.
The fire department has been in the forefront of Milton's civic life for many years. Residents like Gladys Wilkins have especially fond memories of the fire department's role in providing a Merry Christmas for the community.
When I was sick with pneumonia, it was Christmas time, And, of course, at the time, there was the fire company. Always on Saturday, you took a can of canned goods, and you went to the theater, and that was your admission, a can of canned goods. And when it was over, the fire company was there with an orange and a little box of candy, and candy cane. And I knew that I was not going to be able to do that. And that really, really bothered me. And that night, my sister's husband had his uncle, who was in the fire company, to bring the fire, it always makes Todd cry, to come out with the fire truck, and Santa Claus was on the fire truck. And that's, I think, my first thing of really Milton was the Santa Claus.
The Milton Theater was central to community life in Milton until the flood of 1962. We'll talk more about it just a bit later. But first, let's turn north again and walk towards the Union Street commercial area. On the way, we'll see the Noah Wiltbank McGee House at 102 Union Street. The Noah Wiltbank McGee House marks the beginning of the Union Street commercial block. The home is a mid-19th century Victorian Gothic with an 18th century rear core that is said to have been an early tavern. Noah McGee was one of Milton's most prominent shipbuilders and owners, building at least 16 vessels between 1846 and 1874. One, the schooner Annie McGee, built in 1859, was named for his 15-year-old daughter, Anna Hall McGee. Right next door to the McGee House is a store called the Jailhouse. In the mid-20th century, trials were held there on Friday and Saturday nights. Overall, the Union Street commercial block is a 1910 block of buildings that has housed a variety of stores in the past, including hardware, general stores, and grocery stores. The block is the site of an earlier wooden commercial block destroyed in the fire of 1909. A second fire followed in 1939. In 1962, a major flood again damaged the same commercial blocks. Martha Jane Donovan Burke tells us what downtown Milton was like when she was growing up.
When I was growing up, there were three grocery stores downtown, and there was hat shops, beauticians, and hardware stores, and a men's clothing store, and of course Sam's department store that had everything in it, and ice cream shops, and the post office was on Main Street, and all of those kinds of things, and it was much busier. People were more spread out in terms of the farms, and you had to come, it was like you came to town on Saturday night and that day do your shopping and do your business. And a lot of times they brought fresh foods to sell in the stores and things like that for the merchants. And a lot of people used to fish, and you could buy fresh fish downtown in the markets that they had gotten and brought in town to sell. So it was a lot different than it is now. I mean, you knew who owned the grocery store. You knew where the meat came from, what farmer killed the hog, and so forth and so on. And that was the way it was. A lot of bake sales with the homemade goods around, and it was fun. And I can remember my mother being very upset as the big, malls opened and the big grocery stores in Melford and Rehoboth and everything, because she felt that everything should have been local here and you shouldn't have to get in the car and go to Milford to go grocery shopping. And I think I missed that because it really, when it kind of all deteriorated, it did present a problem. You had to go out of town to shop. That was it. We didn't have a grocery store for a while. And that was kind of foreign. It changed. And that the grocery store became a used furniture store, and post office built a new building, and it lost that cohesiveness that it used to provide.
Let's walk just a few steps north on Union Street and stop in front of the Milton Theater. The recently restored Milton Theater is at 108 Union Street. Built about 1912, it was remodeled as an Art Deco movie theater in the late 1920s. It now offers movies and live events, including theater. Martha Jane Donovan Burke remembers what the theater was like in the 1960s.
Of course, I went to the theater when it cost 50 cents to get in, 25 cents for a hamburger and 10 cents for a Coke, and that was the Saturday night activity.
And where would you get the hamburger and the Coke?
In the little snack bar adjacent to the theater. Scotty had that. Ed Scott was his proper name, and he had the little snack bar, which was hooked onto the theater, and that's where we went on Saturday nights and watched a movie, and you went with your boyfriend and sat and held hands. And then there was Crouch's, which was at the end of the block, right on that little group of stores that sat out over in the water. They've been torn down now. But that had a jukebox in it and a little snack bar on the side. This was, I guess, in 60, 61, 62. And we would go in there on Saturday nights and eat ice cream and eat hamburgers and drink Cokes and dance to the music in the jukebox. And that was a lot of fun, too.
If we cross the street and take just a short walk north, we'll reach the Milton Library, once home to the town's button industry. While we're stopped at the library, let's imagine a time when the building was a full-blown button factory. Longtime resident Don Fisher knows a lot about that.
There were about three or four, at least four, good-sized button shops in Milton where the men walked to work and came home for lunch. This is where you went to work and cut buttons out of abalone shell. Came in here from Australia, and I'm very pleased to see that the museum has a full-scale button lathe. They punched them out with these lathes, and it was a tough way to make a living because all those guys had button dust, white button dust, and band-aids around their fingers. Shell would break and punch in there. But they were mainly, as I remember, the size of men's shirt buttons. They were just punched out of the shell and shipped to Philly to be, with the two holes to be drilled in the edge refined. Downtown where the library is, where the new addition is, there was a button outfit there called Libbencott's, but it had gone entirely bankrupt, and it was filled with, I mean, it was like a regular city-type factory, rows of button lathes. The windows were all broken out, but it was just left there. But, and you see, and if you go to the museum, you'll see the box, that those button boxes from Australia, it says produce of Australia. Well, those things were out of some kind of real tough, durable wood, and they were at least 7-quarter wood. I mean, it was 5-quarter, I don't know, it was heavy stuff. Boxes were heavy, and it's surprising, best I can tell, they got that shell even all during the war. And the only thing I can figure is ships coming back from Australia were probably empty, so why not haul shell up here? So they did. And that's, the button shops would have had, beginning with the New Deal era and the Social Security Act, they would have had to pay workers' comp and unemployment insurance, all that good stuff. They literally took the lathes out of the button shops and put them in people's backyards in a structure that could be anything that looked like an outhouse to something a little more elaborate. But then, a guy could work at home, and even his wife got buttons. They wanted them.
Continuing just a few steps north on Union Street, we'll stop briefly at Welch's Drugstore at number 205, a vernacular structure built in the early 1880s for the Welch family and its business. Note the covered walkway and jigsaw trim details, both characteristic features of Milton's architecture. Welch's store, where we're standing now, was owned and operated by three generations of the family until its closing in the year 1988. It's a good example of the kinds of shops and stores that were scattered throughout Milton, with proprietors living in the same house, above, or adjacent to the shop. In addition to the downtown commercial blocks and the small shops which were scattered all over town, delivery wagons brought milk, ice, bread, and fish right to the door. Welch's store sold patent medicine. Everything from toothpaste to a diamond ring could be purchased here. Now let's cross the street and take a look at the millstone in the pavement at the southwest corner of Broad and Union. Tradition holds that the millstone was placed here in 1850 by a government surveyor. Broad Street is one of the two oldest streets in Milton. If you remember, Mill Street is the other. The street features a large collection of homes built around 1800 after land owned by William Peary was subdivided and put up for sale. The structures on Broad Street were typically three-bay houses, like the one at number 122. Many have later mid-19th century additions. The right bay of the Red House at 106 Broad Street, the Carey House, was built in about 1805. The Careys were a family of merchants and owned much of the land fronting Union Street. Hand-hewn cypress shingles on the ends and rear of the house, if not original, date to the 19th century. Cypress swamps were common in the area around Milton, especially in the Trap Pond area, and cypress was used as a building material until Teddy Roosevelt banned the cutting of cypress trees. The bright blue house you see further down the street dates from about 1805 and was the home of Nehemiah Laughlin. In 1802, Laughlin signed a petition against swine running loose in Federal Town. He signed another in 1811 to prevent hogs running loose. Laughlin, who operated a tannery, is listed as owning two houses and a lot in the tax assessment of 1809. The louvered shutters over solid shutters that you see on the home are typical of Sussex County architecture. Right across the lane is the home of ship carpenter Isaac White, also built around 1805. You might be surprised to see the use of modern colors. However, it's interesting to note that early 19th century colors were not always white or muted. Many were vibrant and rich. When you get to Reed Street, turn right. You are now on an early lane that gives a sense of Milton's past. The original lots were deep, but often narrow, extending from one street to the next to accommodate domestic animals, outhouses, sheds, and large vegetable gardens. As you may have noticed, Milton has many outbuildings, summer kitchens, spring houses, and dog trots. Be sure to stop when you reach Tilney. At the corner of Reed and Tilney, you'll see an outbuilding built in about 1790 and said to have been used as a button-cutting cottage in the 20th century. As we've discussed, from the 1930s to the 1950s, backyard button-making sheds could be found all over town. Before we move on, take a look at the home built recently by Habitat for Humanity on the southeast corner. As you continue north on Reed Street, you'll see the rear of the Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church. We'll stop nearby, where Reed intersects Clifton. We're at Reed and Clifton now. A church was built here in the late 1800s, and the current building was erected in the early 1900s. This congregation belongs to the denomination founded in Philadelphia by Richard Allen in 1787. Before the Civil War, this congregation's members may have been conductors on the Underground Railroad. While Milton has no documented Underground Railroad sites, its location on a waterway and its population of free blacks makes this an intriguing possibility. If you look across Mulberry Street, just past where the school is now, you'll see the former site of an extensive peach orchard called Chandler's Orchard. Edward VIII, the Duke of Windsor, who abdicated his position as King of the British Empire to marry an American de Versailles, paid a visit here in 1944. At this time, he was governor of the Bahamas. As we learned earlier, many Bahamians served as farm laborers, and the Duke was on a tour to visit his subjects. While at Chandler's, he was serenaded with a chorus of God Save the King by laborers high in the fruit trees. Let's turn right and continue on Clifton to Union. Now that we're at Union Street, we'll want to turn left. Houses along the west side of the street were built in the late 18th and early 19th century. Of note is number 402, a recently restored late 19th century home on a site which earlier housed a school. Next door, at 404 Union, is an early 19th century home, thought to be the residence of E.L. Collins, a Milton blacksmith. Remnants of his trade are periodically uncovered at the rear of the property. If you'll turn now and face Atlantic Avenue, you can get a peek at what's left of one of Milton's former garment factories. It's about a block down on the north side of the street. Martha Jane Donovan Burke describes what it was like to work there.
A lot of garment factories. In fact, I worked, well, there are two of them that I remember. I worked in one of the garment factories one summer for Robert Hall Clothing. They made clothes for kids. I worked for Graves Manufacturing, turning collars, and the little tiny little girls' clothes we made that summer. And there was Bernstein's and Graves's right out there. And even my mother had worked for Graves's when she was a young lady.
Further out Atlantic is the road to Broadkill Beach, once known as the Poor Man's Riviera. Gladys Wilkins tells us what the beach was like when she was young.
We were lucky when we got down to Broadkill Beach. And Broadkill Beach used to be a very nice beach. People went there. The water was, you know, didn't have to worry about the ocean waves knocking you down. Oh, my, but, well, when I was young, of course, again, things were beginning to get better as I became even a teenager. You know, it was not, I only can say from what was in the past of my time of Broadkill, but there were nice cottages. It was the townspeople mostly that had nice cottages down there, and it was a clean beach. They'd have cookouts down there. Now, 4th of July coming up, they'd have a big to-do down there. People, the men would go out fishing. They'd bring the fish in. They'd clean them, and they'd cook them right away down there. Yeah, and there used to just be, I don't remember the road because by my time it was more modern, but there was just a dirt road that took you into Broadkill Beach.
The corner of Atlantic and Union is also special to Miltonians because it is the beginning of the route for the town's very festive parades. We'll start the last leg of our tour now by walking down the east side of Union Street. Most houses on the east side of Union Street were built in the late 19th century. An exception is the Governor David Hazard Mansion, now Governor's Bed and Breakfast, at 327 Union Street. Let's stop here for just a moment. John Hazard, Governor Hazard's father, acquired his extensive estate bordering Union Street after the American Revolution, when Loyalist Boaz Manlove's estate was confiscated. The house is an 18th century core with early 19th century additions. You will also want to take a look at the Henry Ellingsworth House at number 326, across the street to your left. This house is rumored to have been a stop on the Underground Railroad, and is also thought to be haunted. Catherine Gregg, the current owner, talks about the spirit who might be living in her attic.
So when we came here on the day of closing and you do the little walkthrough, we go up into the attic. And the attic, when we looked at the house, was just packed full. And there, hanging on a clothes bar, were two bags. And I walked over, and they were two old suits, men's suits. And it had a note on the bag for us not to do anything with those suits, because when the original owner of the house, and it, I don't know if it was Ellingsworth or who, but when she died, she requested that these two suits never leave this house. We went to closing and got the keys, and we came back, and Dick starts upstairs with a trash bag. And I said, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "I'm going up there. I'm throwing those suits out." I said, "No, you're not." And those suits are still in that attic today. And I go up there and brush up by them and everything. And honestly, there are times when I feel that there's someone up there with me. Not a evil spirit, but someone who is happy to know that there are people living in this house now that care about it. I do. I have those feelings. And I'm not a person who believes in, you know, ghosts and all that sort of things, but I have that feeling about this house.
A short walk towards town, and we'll reach the Robert Hood Carey House at number 301 Union. We'll stop there. We're standing now at 301 Union Street, the childhood home of Joseph Maule Carey, one of Wyoming's first senators and later governor. An early 19th century house with late 19th century additions, the home is one of several in Milton that are rumored to have been stops on the Underground Railroad. The carriage house on this property is unique in Sussex County. Ken Brittingham, whose parents bought the house from the Carey family, tells us what he has heard about his home's history.
From the time that we bought the home from the Careys, my mother and father were told that this was the room that was part of the Underground Railroad. Now, it was just part of the transference of the property that they got that information. And so, as we grew up in the property, we were always led to believe that this was part of the Underground Railroad. But on the flip side of that, we don't have any documented evidence. And I guess the thing that stands in question is when my mom and dad bought the property, they had no knowledge nor interest. We had limited information at the time about the historic significance of the buildings. And so that information was transferred to my family and remains to this day.
Right across the street is the site of King's Homemade Ice Cream. Originally the Robert Hood Carey Store, this is an 1820s commercial structure with late 19th century alterations. It is the oldest continuously used commercial building in Sussex County. On your way back to the Milton Historical Society, take a look at 214 Union. This house was moved from another site to its present location. Such house moving was quite common in the Milton area. It was usually done with a log and pulley system under man or mule power. Now that you've finished the tour, we know you'll want to spend some time in the museum to see our exhibits and visit the gift shop. We'd also like very much to answer your questions and listen to your comments. Come back and see us when you can, and visit our website frequently, www.historicmilton.org.